Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And we're once again sponsored today by Quip Electric Toothbrushes. Head to getquip.com/martini. And if you buy the toothbrush, you get your first refill pack of brushes free. Much more on that a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's start with our good martini, and we can sum it up with Drill Baby Drill. This is a press release from the Department of the Interior on Thursday. U.S. Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke today announced the next step for responsibly developing the National Outer Continental Shelf Oil and Gas Leasing Program for 2019 through 2024. Which proposes to make over 90% of the total Outer Continental Shelf acreage and more than 98% of undiscovered, technically recoverable oil and gas resources in federal offshore areas available to consider for future exploration and development. By comparison, the current program puts 94% of the OCS off limits. In addition, the program proposes the large number of lease sales in U.S. history. The draft proposed program includes 47 potential lease sales in 25 of the 26 planning areas, including 19 sales off the coast of Alaska, 7 in the Pacific region, 12 in the Gulf of Mexico, and 9 in the Atlantic region. And obviously, the Greens are probably going to gum this up in court. The liberals on Capitol Hill are going to hate this, Jim, but the economy seems to be humming around pretty well right now. If this actually gets green-lighted and this actually happens, this could be awesome.
It is. Now, it is worth noting this comes at a moment where I believe it was either CNBC or one of the other financial news sources was kind of asking, you know, is America now the world's preeminent global energy superpower, which is pretty awesome. That is a pretty spectacular state to be at, considering the way the economy felt like it was being crippled by high gas prices back in the summer of 2008 and for some time after that. An era of fracking and the amount of oil exploration and the oil reserves and the fact that we're now an oil exporting country again. A part of me would not be surprised if you didn't see dramatic expansions of offshore drilling. But I remember back when we had this fight back in 2008, Greg, I've looked up and I found the numbers. So natural oil seepage off the coast of California as of 2008, leaks 150 to 170 barrels of oil per day into the Pacific Ocean, right? So if you just put something, this is not, you know, like we're not drilling, it's not, no one's going down there trying to get it. The floor of the Pacific Ocean is spitting oil at us. It's like Mother Nature is saying, please have this. And we refuse to do that. It just goes into the ocean. So that would generate, you know, just not even drilling any, just putting something on that to collect that natural seepage would get you about in the neighborhood of like 3,000 gallons of gasoline per day, which is pretty darn spectacular. The Department of Interior has, you know, mapped more than 2,000 active submarine seeps along the California coast. Now, this isn't necessarily always damaging to every species. You know, most birds and most fish are smart enough to avoid when they get a sense of oil. But you think about it, this is a natural oil opportunity in which you could actually help the local wildlife, and so you could actually prevent this oil from bothering local wildlife just by building something out there, going down and making sure you're collecting that oil seepage, or maybe even you drill a little further to steer the seepage as possible into our collection and efforts in our derricks and stuff like that. So, Greg, my argument for those having doubts about this policy change is I want to put derricks off of America's coasts in order to save the whales.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously this makes sense.
Have we learned nothing from Star Trek 4, Greg?
Hopefully we didn't learn too much from Star Trek 4. But yes, we need to save the humpback whales or else they're going to be extinct in the, 24th century, whatever they were there, 23rd century. Anyway, let's move on to the bad martini. And that is the week that was for President Trump. And this is not isolated to this week, but Jim, this week is a perfect microcosm for what drives conservatives, at least a lot of conservatives, nuts about President Trump. This should have been a fantastic week for President Trump. We've highlighted some of the good things. We just talked about one of them, trying to expand offshore energy exploration. We talked earlier this week about his strong encouragement for the protesters in Iran. That's fantastic. We talked about the Dow crossing 25,000. That's fantastic. Also this week, we're seeing some of the investigations into Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation looked at by the Justice Department. This should have been an amazing week for President Trump. But he just can't seem to get out of his way. First of all, we lost a day to his tweeting over the size of nuclear buttons as it relates to North Korea. Then came the Bannon statements. Trump didn't initiate that story, but he had to fire back, of course. And while we enjoyed a lot of what he had to say about Steve Bannon yesterday, it's still a distraction from the policy successes and statements that were made this week. And then his reaction to this Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, to the point of trying to have the publisher cease and desist publication of the book, a book, by the way, that he and the rest of his administration fully cooperated with. They just don't like what's in it, and who knows how much is true and how much is not. But nonetheless, this week should have been full of great accomplishments and great progress on a number of issues. And instead, the media, which is only too eager to focus on the bad, Trump served it up to them on a silver platter.
Yeah, I was discussing this with some other conservative bloggers last night, and some of them said, look, you know, it's really unfair the way the media trashes Trump. Things are going really well. The economy is humming. The Dow passed 25,000. Unemployment is down, although I guess in the latest jobs numbers today, it remains steady. It was a not so great jobs report, but things have been pretty good for a while. Wages up, workforce participation up. In fact, I believe the African-American level of unemployment actually hit the record low, according to the numbers out today. So economically, things are going well on a lot of fronts. We talk about the Islamic State being smashed. The border is, you know, illegal border crossings are down pretty dramatically. Crime rate is down. Lots of things are going well. And you know, some people are like, oh, isn't it, you know, terrible that, you know, people, you know, that and like, you know, Trump's doing a really good job. I agree with a lot of those points. One of the things that I would kind of note, though, is that Trump's approval rating is in what? The high 30s, low 40s? And so I think if you have an approval rating in that level, yes, he entered with a low one. Yes, he's a very divisive figure. Yes, he didn't win the popular vote when he won the presidency, et cetera, et cetera. I think if he just cut down on the drama, people would be pretty happy. People would be pretty satisfied with the results this administration is generating. They have a good story to tell. But because there's this constant drama generated by the president reacting to what he sees said about himself on television and taking to Twitter and raging and fuming and you know, getting into these fights, and just stop, focus on your job. You know, like, we didn't want a sports radio talk show host, a reality show host. For, you know, I guess some people would say we did, but this is the consequence, right? That you do a good job and people don't notice because they're constantly following the reality show soap opera. So yeah, it's just been a frustrating aspect of the week that in so many good things happening on good fronts and getting closer to the kind of governance we want to have, the president himself oftentimes be the biggest obstacle to his own success.
Yeah, and people understanding exactly what's being accomplished. So the sad part on top of all that is nothing's going to change. So, Jim, let's talk about some good news, though. And that's if you're looking for a better toothbrush, and let's be honest, if you don't have Quip, you probably need a better toothbrush. You're supposed to brush your teeth for 2 minutes twice a day. But do you? Whether your answer is yes, no, or maybe, you need Quip. The electric toothbrush that looks like it was designed by Apple and cleans like premium electric toothbrushes, but without the high price. Quip is the new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into an ultra-slim design with guiding pulses to simplify better brushing, and all of it at a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes. Quip comes with a mount that goes right on your mirror, fitting seamlessly into your daily routine. There's no charger and no wires, which means Quip is compact, light, and it makes brushing twice daily easy, whether you're at home or on the road.
Quip also offers an optional subscription plan, delivering new brush heads on a dentist-recommended 3-month schedule for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Quip is backed by a network of more than 10,000 dental professionals, including dentists, hygienists, and dental students. Now, I've been using my Quip for a while now, Greg, and I have to tell you, this is the state-of-the-art toothbrush. You will take it out of the package. You will say, this is the toothbrush I've been waiting my whole life for. It really does seem that don't know if you want to say futuristic or advanced, sleek. It looks terrific, but more importantly, it works really effectively. And like I said, all the little quip guidebook to brushing. There's a million things about brushing your teeth you didn't realize or you didn't ever knew that you didn't know. It turns out circles are bad, Greg. I never knew this. Apparently, you're not supposed to be brushing your teeth and making circles like they do. You're supposed to be brushing away and up to get the food off of your teeth. Apparently, rinsing isn't good. Why has all these secrets of dentistry been hidden from us? Quip has broken the case wide open. You can learn a ton about cleaning your teeth, freshening your breath, and making everything better. Greg, my life is now complete with a Quip toothbrush.
And right now, go to getquip.com/martini to get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/martini. That's spelled getquip.com/martini. And Jim, as we talked about in the second martini, the book Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff is getting a lot more attention from the press and a lot more sales probably as a result of the reaction from President Trump. And there's a lot of stories in there from what we're hearing that have a lot of people banging their foreheads. But there's one story that a lot of people now think is in the book that's not. And this is about the Gorilla Channel. Somebody having fun with the book coming out decided to put out an excerpt out there as a parody, and a lot of people think it was true. This is what it says. On his first night in the White House, President Trump complained that the TV in his bedroom was broken because it didn't have the Gorilla Channel. Trump seemed to be under the impression that a TV channel existed and screened nothing but gorilla-based content 24 hours a day. To appease Trump, White House staff compiled a number of gorilla documentaries into a makeshift gorilla channel broadcasted to Trump's bedroom from a hastily constructed transmission tower on the South Lawn. However, Trump was unhappy with the channel they had created, moaning that it was boring because the gorillas aren't fighting. Staff edited out all the parts of the documentaries where gorillas weren't hitting each other, and at last the president was satisfied. Quote, on some days he'll watch the Gorilla Channel for 17 hours straight, an insider told me. He kneels in front of the TV with his face about 4 inches from the screen and says encouraging things to the gorillas like, the way you hit that other gorilla was good. I think he thinks the gorillas can hear him, unquote. So, Jim, some people are going to look at this and say, well, that's just how nuts Trump is, that this is actually seems plausible now to a lot of people. Other people have Trump derangement syndrome and will literally believe anything.
Yeah, this was a previously unknown, little known humor Twitter user. It is intended as parody. I believe I've already seen Touré, who used to have the show on MSNBC, was believing it, and a couple other folks who did it. I just want to salute this. This was a masterclass of parody. As the author of The Weed Agency, the only satirical novel that's reached the Washington Post nonfiction bestseller list, I salute this writer because it begins so plausibly, right? Like the idea, Trump's upset. He doesn't, he moved into the White House and the channel, there's a channel he can't get. Okay, would he be calling it the Gorilla Channel? Well, look, I've heard people call the History Channel the Hitler Channel. The idea that maybe the Animal Planet or one of the nature documentaries, the idea that Trump calls it the Gorilla Channel, very plausible, very believable. The idea, the problem is he throws you as like they set up some sort of remote broadcast on the White House lawn. No, they would not do something like that. You just arrange, figure out how to get it through the right cable system or something like that. And then by the end of it, when he's staring at the screen and telling the gorillas they're doing a good job and he wants to see them fight more. Now we know we're well into parody, but it moves so slowly and gradually into the utterly absurd. It's somewhat believable. It's something of a Rorschach test. There are a certain number of people who believe that Trump is such a drooling imbecile that he could spend 17 hours a day watching a gorilla channel, and that this would be the very first time we would be hearing about this in this Wolf book. But everything down to the font used to make it look like it was an excerpt from the book, really, really well done. I salute that writer. We can all should and have a really good laugh about it. And as many people are saying this morning, Greg, maybe there really should be a Gorilla Channel. That sounds like a good idea.
Yes. The guy's now changed his Twitter handle to The Gorilla Channel Thing is a Joke. At Pixelated Boat is his actual Twitter handle. Jim, have a fantastic weekend. We will talk again on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us again today. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.